please be seated.
Have you both had an opportunity to sign in yet?
Yes, Your Honor.
We have.
Okay, great, thanks. Ms. Granfield, we're ready when you are, sir.
All right, thank you, Your Honor.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Good morning, Your Honor. Yes, sir. My name is Jim Granfield. I'm the public defender in Suffolk. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
5 minutes,
which is,
yes, sir.
Which is another way of saying I may not have 15 minutes of argument to go through.
Okay, very well.
Mr. Granfield, can we get straight to the point on assignment of error one? And that's given the concession of the trial court that, quote, there's no doubt that the public defender was appointed, end quote, how do you win assignment of error one on denial of counsel?
Your Honor, to quote, and I think there's a lawyer the court's familiar with from this area, Greg Matthews always talks about the judges that grant the hearing are often not the ones that sit on the panel.
That's the best answer I can give.
Then Judge Kelsey once responded, and I wouldn't have granted it either. But without conceding anything, I approached this hearing with sort of an educated guess of, again, defense attorney speak, of never concede anything. But I was going to focus my arguments on the third assignment of error as to the sufficiency.
You want to essentially rely on your brief for the first two.
Yes, sir.
And we appreciate that.
Yes, counsel's very well written. I mean, my own brief states essentially the same case law she does. And I'm not familiar with the background of all, Your Honors, but certainly it does happen in general district court that, oops, occasionally somebody to which the PD is appointed, you're in another courtroom and they're three-quarters through the case and I was supposed to have a lawyer. There's no evidence in the record that that happened. Made the argument at the time, but the case law is what the case law is.
Your candor and your credibility are most appreciated.
Well, I'll rely on the candor. So, and as Mr. Dorsk said, probably 8 minutes from now, I'll wish I was on a telephone from here. Your Honor, Timothy Watford was sitting like a lump in that convenience store parking lot, no doubt under the influence of something. And respectfully, this court has expanded the definition of operate a motor vehicle from, we all used to think that meant driving, and the case law just kept marching.
Well, actually, the Supreme Court did that.
Kept marching forward to the point that if you're in a car listening to the radio under the influence of God knows what, you're operating. But in this particular indictment, this particular statutory scheme, his operation wasn't impaired. And so the 42nd President of the United States, Bill Clinton, once famously said, it depends on what is. And the focus of my argument, when it says to operate a motor vehicle, the legislature could have said to operate any motor vehicle. You're impaired and you can't drive or operate any motor vehicle in the world. I would submit that this charging document, this indictment, referred to his operation of that motor vehicle in which he was seated. And that wasn't impaired. And that's borne out by Dr. Lucky when initially questioned by the Commonwealth's attorney about, well, with this toxicology report, these drugs in his system, Dr. Lucky, around page 90 in the joint appendix, makes reference to, well, I think it would impair his driving. It was an objection by counsel. Commonwealth's attorney rephrased his question. And she never really answered as to whether it would affect his ability, as I so eloquently phrased it, to sit there like a lump in his car with the engine running. That was the evidence before the trial court that his operation, as observed by the police officers, was sitting there with the engine running. Absolutely concede operation. Do not concede, and we submit the trial court was plainly wrong in saying that there was evidence before him to show that his ability to sit there like a lump in that car with the engine running was impaired. That's the crux of the argument, Your Honor. If the court has additional questions, I'll be certainly happy to answer them, but as Judge Atlee said, I think got to the heart of the issue, and I've submitted on the first assignment of error.
All right, hearing nothing further. Thank you very much.
You've got plenty of time in rebuttal.
That I do.
Ms. Fitzgerald?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald for the Commonwealth. Given the discussion earlier, I will also focus my argument on the third assignment of error and submit on my brief on those first two, unless the Court has particular questions. Moving to the sufficiency issue, the evidence in this case was certainly significant and sufficient enough to find that this person was in no ability to drive or operate a motor vehicle. The trial court was made aware of that factual distinction, and the trial court heard significant medical evidence regarding the impacts of Valium and morphine on this man's system. In addition to the testimony that he shouldn't probably have been driving on this medication, which he admitted to the police officer, the doctor also testified that these medications taken together had an exacerbating effect. They were central nervous system depressants. They led to people being on the pops or on the nods, rapidly moving from sleeping states to waking states, and this is borne out by the evidence in this case where the gas station employees thought this man might have been deceased as he sat in his car, but then shortly thereafter he was able to talk to the police officer. He clearly wasn't making good decisions. He was lacking sensory motor skills, and he was sitting in a motor vehicle with the engine running. And the Supreme Court has said on multiple occasions that a vehicle can be a deadly weapon. And in Stevenson's dissent, or the dissent in Stevenson, which was later adopted by the Supreme Court as law, it talks about, you know, how a car is just moments away from being put on the road to be putting in harm's way. An operator is someone in physical control of a vehicle, and this person was not in any state to be in physical control of something as dangerous as a car, especially where this person was sitting with the engine running, moments away from doing a number of things. And to the extent that that's a policy determination that the General Assembly has made and that the court has recognized that even operating a vehicle under these conditions is criminal, that's a legislative decision that that I think flies a little counter to my opposing counsel's argument that, you know, he wasn't impaired in his ability to sit there like a lump. Well, the Supreme Court has said that even sitting there in that state, you are so dangerous to the public because you could at any moment get on the road, that your ability to operate, your ability to be in physical control of this motor vehicle has been impaired. And again, the medical testimony in this case was certainly enough to bear that out. The trial court, sitting as fact finder, could draw inferences from basic facts to ultimate facts, and from that medical testimony and from the defendant's behavior in this case was certainly justified in concluding that he was too impaired to operate to be in physical control of a motor vehicle. I'm happy to answer questions from the court in that regard. I'd ask you to affirm on the sufficiency issue and rely on my brief for the rest.
Very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Granfield, any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I would submit that the line of cases from the Supreme Court about, you're right, if you're operating, then it's the prescribed harm is, what if you then start driving? Those cases, I would submit, apply more to the per se alcohol cases where you have an alcohol reading, and as my...
There's nothing that restricts those cases in that manner, is there?
No, Your Honor, but the language of the statute... And as I called my own argument at trial, sort of geeky grammatical argument about the Commonwealth has several choices under which or options to prove their case. But the ones that relate to drugs, and this appears to be a drug case, the alcohol rating was 0.00, and we had the toxicology report. So the Commonwealth has to prove either driving or operating. And in this case, we submit they proved operating. And operating... in a manner that was impaired. And that's the crux of it. I was going to wrap up. When Judge Sandwich, in his comments at the end, and I'm asking this court to, normally it's the trial court follows the appellate court, I'm asking the appellate court to follow the trial court, and on page 102 of the joint appendix, when he wrapped up and said, and if I were sitting as an appellate court, I'd take everything you say in consideration. I'm asking this court to look at the sort of hyper-technical, grammatical way in which this indictment was worded and find that the Commonwealth didn't prove that he operated, that operation wasn't impaired.
But you do acknowledge that if we apply the term operator as the Supreme Court applies it to that particular portion, we would have to rule... would have to affirm Judge Sandwich.
No, I think I'm distinguishing that the Supreme Court's definition of operator, I concede he was operating.
You're saying there's a difference between operating as such by sitting
yes.
in a stationary vehicle, even though the engine's running,
yes.
and operating on whatever adjacent roadway there may be at 30 miles an hour or anything like that.
Yes. One of the prosecutors in Suffolk, and as far as I know, this issue hasn't come up with the appellate courts yet, but when we talk about the harm to be prescribed of the person sitting in a motor vehicle, they might drive off. Sooner or later, I presume this court and Supreme Court will get one of these remote start cases
yeah.
that the mm-hmm. person who's under the influence in their front yard yeah. and hits that, whether it's the remote start to warm it up for their spouse or whatever, there's 1,000 scenarios, they could be under the influence. I hope a court doesn't say they're operating, but I would submit at some point the appellate courts, and I'm asking this one, to distinguish that the operation referred to is the operation in the particular case, not in a generic sense.
Almost subsets of,
yes.
of how operation is defined.
Yes, sir.
Fair enough.
We
thank you
other
very
questions?
Much. We'll step down and greet counsel. The case is submitted.